The third day of our special report titled The Reverse Retirement Wave, Planning a Workforce That's Aging in Place. And my guests to cap off our special report are Catherine Emerson, the Chief Human Capital Officer at the Department of Homeland Security, and Miriam Cohen, the Chief Human Capital Officer at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Ladies, thank you very much for joining me today. I really appreciate your time. And I want to start with you, Miriam. What are the principles and the priorities of your long-term strategy? We're looking 5 to 10 years out, maybe even beyond that, as you're planning your workforce. Thanks for joining me very much, Miriam.
Thank you for having us. It's a really great question. And in fact, we are right now in the midst of looking at where we're going to be in 2020 in terms of sort of a self-assessment at where the agency's going, because we want to assess our ability to be more agile and more effective while ensuring our ability to protect the public health and safety. And we're trying to figure out how we can ensure that we are going to have the agility and the fungibility of our workforce as we move to the future, and specifically because we have such a highly skilled and technical workforce, we want to make sure that the people that we have continue to have the skills necessary so that we can meet our mission. And in fact, the challenge that we have is not always similar to other agencies. We have people that stay here for a long time. We like to think it's because we're a great place to work. At the same time, we have to ensure that the people that we have are keeping up with the requisite skills that are necessary to ensure that people can maintain their skill sets as the workload changes as well. So we do put a premium on having highly technical employees. We try to invest in learning and development, and we're going to try to ensure that while the external world may change in terms of the number of, let's say, nuclear power plants that may continue to exist in the future, we want to be sure that the people that we do have can certainly meet that mission, whether it's smaller than it is today or not.
I want to come back to that concept of agility, because it's a term that I hear a lot in the human capital community, not just in government, but outside too. Catherine, thank you very much for joining us too. Same question to you. What are the priorities that you're establishing as you plan for a workforce 2020, 2025, and beyond at DHS? Thanks for coming on.
For having me. It's my pleasure. Planning for our future needs is critical to a department as large as DHS. We have over 225,000 employees, and we have a very important mission that is protecting our homeland. DHS has a human capital strategic plan. It's a 5-year plan that was developed with the input of our leadership and all of our components, and it primarily focuses on acquiring a qualified, diverse, and mission-focused workforce that meets our critical needs, developing, retaining, and engaging our workforce, and placing a special focus on our mission-critical occupations such as cybersecurity, border protection, and transportation security, just to name a few.
The ways that you go about doing that, I imagine, are, of course, different for each of the different specialties. But what are some of the common elements that you look at as you're planning, for example, a law enforcement workforce and a cybersecurity workforce, Catherine?
Well, we work with our components. We have various councils that get together and identify the critical needs that we have in terms of evaluating the skills gaps, what training we need, what our retention and succession statistics are. So we really come together as a department to evaluate those different needs.
Miriam, I want to go back to that agile reference that you made earlier. And that concept, as I mentioned, I'm hearing more and more as I talk to folks in the human capital community. What does that term mean in your view, your personal view, as far as how you want to be able to apply it to a workforce as time goes on?
Yeah, and one of the things, and it is kind of like the new buzzword, but I think a lot of times when we hire people into the government, they're hired for a particular job and a particular task, and people get very good at that, and they become very, very specialized. But then what might happen over time is that they become so specialized that it's hard to move them to new and emerging areas. And so one of the things that we're going to try to do is, and it's going to be a long-term plan, is to reduce the time it takes to shift employees hours from their work assignment to maybe meet the new changing demands of, that have come out as a result of changes in the environment. And to do that, we're looking at developing the competency models for the various most populous occupations that we have and figuring out how we can get people to these new competencies in a much more quicker environment than in years past, and also to promote agility as something that's actually good for someone's career, because quite frankly, as promotion opportunities are not what they have been in the past, it's going to be more important that people learn and grow into new different areas. And while they may have to spend more time in a horizontal fashion, it will help their long-term career prospects because they'll have a much bigger toolkit.
You've scratched the surface on another idea I want to come back to, but I love the idea of promoting agility as something that's good for one's career, because it strikes me that that's a very proactive response to the change management deal that I've heard is also very difficult.
Yes, it is. And I think one of the things that we're, I think, challenged with as any other agencies is that it's not always easy to communicate bad news. And while we don't see there's any bad news in our particular agency, I would view challenging times ahead as opportunities. And so therefore, we have a policy in our agency that we want to never conduct a reduction in force at all possible. And while the agency may change a little bit from the size that it is today toward what it may be in 3 to 5 years, we see the fact that we can take our people, invest in our people, and give them new opportunities is actually a very good news story.
Catherine, that seems to me to be the most challenging thing that you and all of your colleagues in human capital and the government are going to be up against, is that the government will be doing dramatically different things 5 years from now than it is today. I mean, I think if we look back 5 years, we certainly don't see the same things that we're doing today. And a 10 to 15 year time frame is even more important than that. Do you have the opportunities when you're dealing with the components, as you talked about a moment ago, to think that conceptually, or are you in a situation where you're thinking more operationally, and this is the set of skills that we need today, we're going to anticipate a little bit into the future, but we don't really have the opportunity to think that far ahead, to think that conceptually? Or maybe it's a situation where you don't expect the missions to change that dramatically in some of these components, and you can be confident of what you're planning for in a 5 to 10 year window.
Well, I think we're always experiencing change, but you hit the nail right on the head. We actually do a little bit of both there. We're looking at what our current needs are, but also looking out the 5, 10 years and beyond on what are our needs for to accomplish our mission. So we have councils set up where we work with our components to evaluate the skill sets. We look at competency models. We look at our attrition rates, which are actually pretty good compared to the rest of the government. We look at our retirement numbers. So we do a lot with data analytics and relying on that a lot more than perhaps, say, in the past. And I have to also mention HR Stat that OPM has put in place has proved very useful for DHS. And it really helps us to look at our human capital challenges and succession planning.
Do you view that, Catherine, as an effective tool then, I imagine, to help you do all of these things, to help you figure what your structure is going to look like?
Yes, and one of the things I'd also like to mention is because of the sheer size of DHS, we have a lot of opportunities in the department for our employees. So one thing that we're looking at as part of the employee engagement initiatives that our leadership has put in place are opportunities for our employees to get positions in their own component, or perhaps if they're interested in going to another component in DHS, we have increased the visibility of career opportunities that are available. And also we're taking a look at the possibilities of using rotations, details, and maybe even some shadowing opportunities.
What's the response been to that opportunity to move amongst the components, Catherine?
Well, it's something that we're looking in right now, certainly going to work with our union partners on it. But so far, just talking about it a little bit, we've gotten a lot of excitement from our employees. So a very positive response, and hopefully one that our employees embrace and are able to make a long-term career here at DHS. That's one thing that we do find, that our employees come here, and they stay. They are very attracted to the mission of DHS.
Miriam, what are some of the tools? You've very eloquently laid out the strategy that you have in mind, I think. What are some of the tools that you expect to be able to execute the elements of what you've described so far?
Yeah, and thanks for that. And just to provide an appropriate contrast, Catherine's in a huge department. We're small, we're independent, we're about 3,700 employees. At one point we were close to 4,000, but as the nuclear renaissance did not materialize as people had suspected it would, we're around 3,700. So it's a little bit easier in a smaller organization to be a little bit more quicker and move and do some things that maybe in a larger cabinet agency. It's a little harder. And so one of the things that I would like to build upon that Catherine mentioned that we've been doing for many, many years, and it's extremely successful, is we have a very active rotational program. I mean, compared to other agencies, and I've been in other agencies, this agency puts a very high premium on employees at all levels getting rotational opportunities. So that could be departing from your office for a 3 to 6 month period. You could go from a headquarters to a regional office, and or vice versa. We also have technical people that might come into a corporate position. Again, these are things that are really systemic and valued in the organization. It's what we look at when we look at succession planning and people becoming a leader in the organization. We want to see people that have had the opportunity to spend a lot of time in different areas, and that's highly valued by the senior management. As far as other tools, and this is something we're just embarking on, is because we're a highly technical workforce, we do a lot of technical training. We have a center down in Chattanooga where a lot of our entry-level employees go to pick up certain skills that are required for them to be successful. And as we look at sort of distance learning and what we see with colleges, et cetera, we're trying to move into a much more of a blended learning environment, moving away from classroom settings. And so in addition to wanting to recruit and retain the highest quality people, we want to invest in people. And the younger generation, the newer generation, they don't really want to learn in the classroom. And so we are trying to look at some of the best practices in blended learning, providing people to be able to learn and work from anywhere. And it's something that we're just getting our feet wet on, but it's something that we need to do to remain competitive and to keep people interested in the nature of the work that we're doing in a fundamentally different way than we did as we trained people 20 years ago.
Catherine Emerson of DHS, you've already touched on some of the high points of the tools that you expect to use to hit your strategic goals in human capital in the coming years. But dig into them a little bit more. What are some of the most important ones that you expect to call on, maybe even ones you're not using to the degree now that you expect to in the future?
Well, we were just talking about rotations. One of the exciting things that we have going on at DHS is our SES CDP program, and the candidates who are in that program, they embark on rotations. And in the past, those rotations were primarily done in the employee's own component. So one of what we're looking at now is requiring rotations outside of their components and into another component in DHS so they'd have an opportunity to see how the other components operate. Another thing that we're doing is we have a training for our new SES, where they are given an innovative challenge, a problem that either exists in the department as a whole or in their component, and they are teamed up with a senior SES who's been at the department for a while as a mentor to help work on that innovative challenge. So very exciting. So relying on both innovation and mentoring in that area. And we talked for a minute, or Miriam talked for a minute about the younger generation. One of the things that we're looking at are our internship programs. For example, we have for cybersecurity, we have a Cyber Student Volunteers Initiative, which allows us to provide students and recent graduates an opportunity to receive hands-on exposure to important and very high-profile careers here at DHS, which we hope leads them to pursue a career with us. We've also been doing a lot of work reaching out to minority-serving institutions and the major education associations and universities through some targeted outreach efforts. And finally, we're also doing a very good job in hiring veterans here at the department. We find that veterans fit very well in our law enforcement work that we have. They come here and they like to stay. So right now, our veteran workforce is over 25%. So very, very positive there.
But the millennial population is kind of the 800-pound gorilla in the room, it seems, from a human resources perspective in government. With as many employees as are at least eligible to retire, even though, as we talked about at the beginning of this conversation, they're not actually leaving yet, a lot of young people, I imagine, and the statistics are starting to bear this out from what I understand, a lot of young people come into government, stick around for 2 or 3 years, and then decide, for whatever reason, not to stay. And I wonder if we have a sense yet, and I'll let either one of you answer this that chooses to first, wonder if we have a sense yet of whether they're not sticking around because they don't see much room for advancement because of the senior people who are sticking around at agencies, or if that's just kind of the nature of the beast, if that is just what we can expect and something we should start to figure to incorporate into strategic planning, is that the average 25 or 30-year-old person in 2015 is only going to come and stay 3 years, no matter how wonderful it is, because he or she is just wired differently than what we've seen in your generation. I think I'm a generation ahead of you guys, and my generation and behind me.
You know, I'll take that one.
Yeah, go ahead, Catherine.
Here at DHS, actually, we're doing a fairly good job with our millennials. Our workforce is over 20% millennial, so we're higher than the rest of the government, and we haven't really seen them leaving. Our law enforcement positions, they tend to come and stay in those positions. Now, areas like cybersecurity, sure, we may have to change the way that we look at when we hire cyber talent. And that's primarily not just because of their millennials, but just the job market in general. So what we'd like to see is certainly cybersecurity experts who come to the department to stay at least 3 or 5 years if they want to make a career here, better for us. But, you know, we're not hiring them with the expectation or the requirement that they stay 20, 30 years. But we certainly want them to come and have a very positive experience, work on some high-level assignments, and perhaps go out in the private sector and tell others about the wonderful work that they had an opportunity to work on here at DHS. So, but like Marion said, and I had said before, we're a really large agency, so we have a lot of opportunities for folks to stay and move around in the different components.
Miriam, you want to take that question too, please?
Yeah, and again, we're small. We're smaller, but we have really no trouble attracting people to our agency. For the positions that we have, our retention level for entry level professionals, I think, is almost close to 90%. And I don't know all the occupations, but for a lot of the technical folks that come in, it's extremely high. For our folks that wind up in the highly technical engineering positions that we offer, we have a very robust entry level training program, and people get that training and they get deployed into our regional and headquarter offices and are very, very capable, very, very motivated. And if they do well, they can move up pretty quickly in the organization. And so I think, like Catherine, there is a very strong commitment to the mission. People that come here want to stay here. And the question is can we keep, you know, people engaged, you know, in this environment as sort of the federal sector continues to come under attack? I think that's a broader issue about the value proposition of working in the federal government that I think is something that has to be looked at as we move into the future.
And I imagine that's tremendously frustrating. I apologize if I'm putting words in your mouth, but that's something that's really not in the control of the agencies themselves. It's not really up to you all to set the tone of the dialogue about the federal government overall across the country. So I imagine that's something that is frustrating for both of you.
Well, I think, because speaking for our agency, again, we're smaller, and we've been very fortunate to have been, you know, consistently ranked as one of the best places to work. Even though our scores have gone down in recent years, I think it's a factor of the general environment in the federal government with the recent furloughs and pay freezes and restrictions on awards. I think that's the new environment that federal employees see themselves in. I'd like to think that people that come into the federal sector come in for a certain reason or because they're attracted to the mission. And I think it's important for leaders in the organization to ensure that people can focus on what's under their control and not worry about what happens externally. And I think part of the way that people like Catherine and I can do that is to ensure that managers are equipped with the tools that they need to keep people engaged in the work of the agency, because that's what brought the folks into the government in the first place.
But Catherine, we talked about tools a moment ago, the tools that you have and that you expect to use. Are there some that don't exist yet or that you don't have access to yet that you would like to have, maybe from the administration, maybe from OPM, or maybe just things that you need to do internally that you'd like to be able to use in order to help you meet your goals, but you don't have or don't have enough of yet?
I'll pick up right where Marion left off on those pay freezes, etc. Basically, I think all departments could use more stable funding and budget certainty. And I know, for example, in DHS, that would be a big one for us as well, because we recently faced a potential lapse in budget. And that's very disruptive. It affects morale. It causes pauses in hiring. So budget certainty would go a long way, I think, for all of the government as a tool that we all could use. And also, I think that enhancing existing technology would go a long way as well and promote information sharing. I know that would be especially appreciated here at DHS, and I know other government agencies would appreciate that as well.
And that's, I wonder, too, if that's potentially a point of frustration for someone inside the agency, because, again, those are things that are not really under your control. You can ask for them, and I know that you and your colleagues have. I talked to your chief financial officer, Chip Fulgham, about that very issue back when DHS's funding was still in question. So I know this is something that the agency's very, very active on the Hill talking about on an ongoing basis. But, again, ultimately, the decision's not up to you. How does that impact the way that you plan and the way that you have to think about executing the strategies that we've already discussed?
Well, unfortunately, it's been something that we've had to deal with. And as I said, it can be quite disruptive in terms of affecting morale, causing pauses in hiring, limitations on training and travel opportunities. That's certainly not something that we want to encounter on a regular basis. That's why I said budget certainty would go a long way, not just for DHS, but all of the federal government.
Marion, what tools don't exist now or don't exist in a way that you would find the most useful that you'd like to have access to? Anything, as I said, from the administration, from OPM, or things that you would need to do internally?
Yeah, and I think Catherine touched on a few of them. I mean, certainly budget certainty would be lovely, but that's, I don't know how realistic that is. But I do think that the pay compression issue is still real. I think especially in the STEM areas where there is a lot of competition for talent, and in cybersecurity and other areas, I think that we have to look at pay compression. Especially, we should also look at what's going on with executive pay as well. But I think for the broader, that's for the broader issues. I do think that some of the other tools that are very important is, as I alluded to earlier, is we need to make sure that we can have people that are mobile and can work from anywhere. And we're trying to make further headway on that in our agency. Clearly, there are cybersecurity issues that we all have to be mindful of. But I think sometimes we just have to assess the appropriate risk and determine what we need to do to make our people as productive as they need to be, whether they work in the field or in remote locations, to give them the tools that they need to be able to perform their jobs. Within our particular agency, we have a number of hiring flexibilities, so we're in very, very good shape. We continue to appreciate OPM support of the 3 R's. So we're very, very comfortable with where we are right now. And as I mentioned earlier, we have the ability to bring in people at competitive salaries, and that hasn't been a problem for us.
You each are obviously members of the Chief Human Capital Officers Council in your positions as CHICOs at your agencies. Catherine, I'll go to you first on this one. How does that organization facilitate the way that you're able to work with Miriam and your other colleagues across government? And how has that exchange been helpful as you're building some of the strategies and using some of the tools that we've discussed so far?
I think that's been extremely helpful. In that forum at the Chico Council, we work very closely with one another during that council, during the meetings, but also outside of the council. But it also brings to OPM and OMB's attention the challenges, the workforce challenges that all the agencies are struggling with. For example, we were struggling with digital service experts, and OPM is now providing a government-wide authority for hiring digital services experts. And in doing so, they've gone out with a request to find out how many experts each agency plans to hire. It's also an opportunity for us to bring training needs to their attention, and as a result of that, we have HR University, which a lot of our HR specialists and others are making good use of. So there's some really good positive things that are coming out of the Chico Council.
Miriam, your thoughts on the council?
Yeah, and I would echo that, and I would say that in the past 3 to 5 years, I've seen a marked improvement of the ability of the Chico Council to raise important strategic issues, to take them on, to develop the appropriate working groups, and to understand, to be in those meetings and to understand the issues from either a large cabinet agency's perspective or a small one, like where we are. I think it really is good to hear the dialogue. It's good to bring diverse minds and opinions together. And OPM has really shown, in my view, an ability to want to improve that relationship between their role as the head of HR, let's say, for the government, and, as well as to listen to what are some of the struggles that the individual agencies are having.
So I know it's hard to do so in an organization like the Chico Council that's facilitated by OPM, but let's take them out of the equation for just a minute if we can. And Miriam, we'll go to you first on this one. What's the information sharing like among your peers at other agencies, I assume facilitated by the Chico Council, but maybe not limited just to that relationship?
I think it depends. So, for example, Catherine and I might see each other at a particular conference or be on a panel together, and we would have the opportunity to engage in that way. I happen to have worked with the Chico, Jerry Buchholz. She used to work at the NRC. So I think the Chicos have their own kind of networking that are going on, but there's not always the same issues that I might have in my agency that I might need to speak to someone in a sub-bureau at a DHS that I might not necessarily need to outreach to Catherine. But I think the contacts do exist. The Chico community is, I think, pretty tight-knit. And I think we know where to go if we need some assistance or support on an issue, or if we want to talk to somebody and brainstorm a particular topic. I believe it's a very, very good group, and it helps network and resolve solutions
and
problems.
That's great to hear. And Catherine, I didn't mean to imply with the question that I thought there needed to be some specific kind of structure either in or outside of the Chico Council to facilitate that information sharing. But it is encouraging to hear that there is that kind of anecdotal exchange that each of you and your peers seem to feel comfortable connecting with each other, whether you're in the same circle or same size agency or same whatever. That it sounds like, from what Miriam describes, that it's a pretty fluid situation and that everybody feels like the resources are available to share each other, even if it's just brain power.
Absolutely, and I would agree with that. There's a lot of sharing of ideas. Let me give you an example. Back when we had the shutdown, which was a very unfortunate situation, you had every single agency coming together on the Chico Council working to make sure that our employees were provided what they needed during that time frame and that we were handling that difficult situation as best that we could. And that's truly a situation where the Chicos across government were there for each other. We were putting in a lot of hours, but we were doing a lot of research, and we were supporting one another Another area where we've given a lot of support to each other is on the Veterans Initiative. That's been a big initiative under this administration, and we've all come together to help one another to make sure that we have the tools needed to increase our veterans hiring and to give the veterans what they need when they come to work for the federal government. In fact, we just rolled out a report on the hiring of women veterans that was very positive, and that was led by my staff and DHS, but also it involved the work, a tremendous amount of work from all the agencies across the government.
I used the term change management earlier in our conversation, and I'd like to explore that in the just a few minutes that we have left. All of these issues that we've discussed imply the tremendous and dramatic changes that we all expect to see in the government in the coming years. We also are all aware of the retirement numbers that we spoke about at the very beginning of our conversation, in which the retirement wave that really people have been predicting would happen at some point in the past 15 years has never really come about. And now there are a number of folks who seem to believe that it will never happen. Catherine's predecessor at DHS, Jeff Neal, was on the program when we began this special report earlier in the week, and talking about the fact he believes it will never happen, that it, what he believes, what he expects to happen is kind of what's happening now, where folks will go when they're ready to go, and there's not much the government can do to influence that. There's also not much that even the Congress can do with some of the things that they appear to be trying to do inadvertently, maybe, to shape the workforce. So that implies then that there's going to be kind of a cultural or change management issue that you and your peers will deal with in the coming 5 to 10 years as the nature of the work changes, but maybe the nature of the workforce doesn't change that much. Miriam, I imagine in an area that is so technologically advanced and so scientifically based as what you do at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, this might be something that you've already started to at least think about, if not work on within the agency. Is that a fair assumption on my part?
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting paradox because on one hand, we have people that come here and stay here because they absolutely love it. And so I think the question is how do we ensure that they have the careers that they need and can meet the mission demands of the organization over the course of time? And so I think it starts with having a good pipeline of people coming in. And as I mentioned earlier, we don't have a problem getting folks in at the entry level. The other more interesting tidbit for me, looking at the workforce and where it's going, is that we seem to be also an attractive candidate for what I would call mid-career employees that have worked out in the industry, that have come into the government because of quality of life issues. In fact, there are some people that worked at a particular power plant in the nearby area that are willing to take a 1.5-hour commute, if not longer, so they can get off of shift work and actually be able to work, a 10-hour day, 4 days a week. And so I think we have to look at some of the benefits that the federal government can offer, such as work-life flexibilities and those kind of things, weave them into making sure that people have quality work assignments, that they continue to stay engaged in the work of the organization. Because I think if you look at the trends and the organizations that we're in and the workforce demographics indicate that there is the graying of the workforce, We don't shy away from that. We want people that have the experience so that they can be successful in the organization. But at the same time, we know we're going to have to replenish with the millennials and ultimately just new people that have never worked in the federal government. So I think we have to manage it. We understand that environment. We understand we have a niche cadre of employees that we're looking to hire, and it's just making sure that we stay current with the workforce demographics, but continue to provide meaningful work assignments, even as mission requirements may change over time.
Catherine, I imagine with the law enforcement component at DHS, you have, at least among law enforcement, this is less of an issue because there are requirements for those folks to turn over. But how are you looking at the attrition, churn, graying of the workforce, whatever name we want to attach to it. How are you looking at that issue from a change management perspective at DHS and doing what Miriam talked about, which is ensuring that as the workforce transitions demographically, that they continue to fit the mission needs of the agency?
Well, as I was saying earlier, our attrition rate at DHS is actually lower than the rest of the government. So our folks come here, they're very attracted to the mission, and they find that it's a good place to stay. And as I said earlier, they also, if they want to move out from one of their components to another one, there's opportunities for other job growth in that regard. But one of the things I think we really focus on is we want to keep our quality workforce, and we want to make sure that we are providing them with the training that they need so that they can sharpen their skill set, mentoring opportunities. But also, our current leadership is putting a big emphasis on rewards and recognition. And that goes a long way to maintaining your workforce. Sometimes just saying thank you, letting people know that they're valued, will go a long way in determining if someone's ready to move on to another job. So we're putting a big emphasis right now on employee engagement, and looking at our employees and providing them with what they need. Marion was right on the mark when she said the work-life opportunities are important as well. So a lot going on here at DHS in that regard.
The attrition rate, I guess we can kind of correlate that to the retention rate. Miriam, you said it's not hard to find folks to come in. Have the last couple of years of pay freeze, shutdown talk, sequester talk, all of that, I know your agency's smaller and it's structured a little differently, has all of that, though, impacted overall, do you think, on a person-by-person level? You referenced the numbers earlier. I'm not as concerned about the numbers as what your sense is of what you hear from people as they come to you and talk about leaving or talk about going to different places within the organization.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a concern in the organization, and I would say that when the agency was growing between 2000 and early 2000s to around 2010, the grades were more plentiful, the organization was growing, it was a very, very happy time, and as those times have changed and people don't see the same level of promotion opportunities, and that's coupled with what's going on in the external environment, people are concerned and they don't see that there's the same futures that there might have been, that maybe their colleagues that are a few years ahead of them are much higher in the food chain than them. And so we know that there are some folks in the organization that aren't feeling the same way about the agency that maybe people did maybe 10 years ago. And so I think our biggest challenge is to really focus on the work, appeal to people for why they came to the organization in the first place. I do agree with Catherine completely that we have to understand the motivators in the workforce, and even in the federal sector with pay raises and awards having been shrunk considerably over time, we do understand what motivates people, and having people walk around and thank someone for a job well done, recognizing someone through a special act and just an attaboy. Those are the things that I think are really important. When you can get acknowledged for the work that you do by your managers or even by your colleagues, there's a lot of peer awards that people recognize their fellow peers for jobs that are well done. And those are, to me, sometimes even more valuable than rewards that maybe come from upper level management. But I do continue to see this as a challenge for the workforce. I see with not knowing where some of the legislation on the Hill is, that continues to be a concern, because we need to value the contributions of the people that are doing the important work for the citizens of this country.
I have one final question, and I'm very grateful for the generous amount of time that each of you has given me to talk about these issues today. And I'll just throw it out there, and whichever of you wants to take it up first is welcome to do so. If we were to have this conversation again in 3 to 5 years, shine up your crystal ball for me and tell me what you see at that time that leads you to say that conversation we had back in the past, the things that we talked about happened, and they happened the way that we wanted them to. And so our workforce today looks like fill in the blank with what you would measure as a successful implementation of the strategies and concepts that we've talked about today. Whoever wants to go first, please may do so.
I'll jump out there and take it. In 3 to 5 years, I hope that we have many of the same employees that we have on board currently at DHS, because we have a wonderful workforce. They go out every day and just accomplish great things. But I would like to see a workforce that's diverse, engaged, and valued. And those individuals who value their opportunities to work here at DHS and also tell others to come and work at DHS.
So, Miriam, the good news about Catherine going first is you had an extra chance to think about it. The bad news is she might have stolen some of your ideas. So,
we sit like right two people down from each other in the Chico meeting. So, yeah, she definitely took most of my ideas away. But, I mean, the one thing I would say is that 3 to 5 years in government time is not a lot. I mean, bureaucracies inherently move slowly. Budget cycles take a while. So I don't see dramatic changes, honestly, in 3 to 5 years. I think that looking at where the federal government is now, I think that we need to increase the value proposition for the millennials to want to come into the government. I think we want to continue to provide meaningful work assignments for people at all levels of the organization, and just sort of gear people up to why they came into government in the first place, so that we don't lose that positive energy that we all, I think, had when we first came in many years ago.
Catherine Emerson is the Chief Human Capital Officer at the Department of Homeland Security. Miriam Cohen is the CHECO at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Ladies, thank you very, very much for your valuable time today. I really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you.
All right. Let me...